there, everybody, and welcome to the penultimate episode, which is minute 171 of the Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me for this second to last episode is Jason Sirsik, Agent Palmer. Welcome back, Jason.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I did well enough the first time. You had me back again.
Well, you know, I was just hoping to start steering you in the direction of the cooler. So hopefully that'll work. Or maybe not. Who knows? So yeah. Yesterday we finished with Hiltz making his march, which is not a walk of shame. It's a walk of pride towards the cooler. I've come to the realization that Hiltz is most comfortable sleeping in the cooler because he spent most of his time there. There's nowhere else where he, you know, we never see him in any other bunk. The only place we see him is here.
You're saying Hiltz is one of those guys that came back after the war and was like, you know, he was like staying with whoever, and they were like, why are you sleeping on the floor? He's like, it's comfortable down here.
That's right. There's no place.
I need something hard to lay on.
That's right. Just give me a baseball, a mitt, and a hard floor, and I'm good. Episode 171 begins with Hiltz re-entering the cooler once again and goes all the way till we get the credit of Gordon Jackson, who plays Mac. So we ended yesterday's episode by seeing – we saw his shadow on the wall, and now we get to see him actually show up. He comes into that very familiar corridor and starts walking towards us. Now, first of all, I love that they have the main theme of the movie in this scene. It gives such an uplifting feel to the whole thing, and it's just done really well.
Yeah, it's one of those. I think it's done in a lot of the movies I like, which might say something more about Hollywood and me than other things. But like, I think about like the end of Memphis Belle has that score that's also positive and uplifting.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like one of those.
Right. But the difference with that Memphis Belle is you didn't have, there wasn't very much tragedy. Sorry, I spoiled Memphis Belle for anybody who has.
It's okay, fine, but
there's triumph. There's definitely triumph. There's no question about that. But it's not tragic. This movie is tragic, but it doesn't come across as sad.
Well, the tragic was before I got here. The tragic was 168 and 169 when they delivered the news of
right.
the casualties.
That is true.
170 is all about that comment. The 170 is all about the commandant going and Hilt returning, and 171 we are now on to better, and we're upbeat, we're back. You know, the company's not whole, but we're not giving up.
Right. Okay, that's true. I agree with you on that. So they walk down the corridor. The familiar guard that Hilt's played the trick on weeks and weeks and months ago. Where he took the keys from him. He's still holding on to his keys really well to make sure that Hiltz doesn't get the better of him. But he apparently knows him quite well by this point because the two of them have spent a lot of days on opposite sides of that door.
Yes.
There's no question about that.
I have to tell you, the fact that the guard looks more defeated and depressed opening that door than Hilt does going inside says a lot about that particular guard. That guard is literally doing the bare minimum.
Yes.
He's like, I don't want to be here. Why do you?
I don't want to be in Stalag Look 3, or I don't want to be in the cooler.
I don't want to be anywhere. Like, I want to be on a beach.
He probably still wants to be there as opposed to being on the Russian front.
Well, okay. All right. Fair. All right.
You know, yesterday we mentioned the fact that Von Luger was talking about, you know, sitting out the war comfortably in Stalag Luft 3. That's pretty much the way the movie presents it, that the guards have a pretty easy time. You know, come on. We went through almost 3 hours of a movie and you had one prisoner get shot that was trying to escape. The rest of them, you know, just got out and they didn't catch him. Yeah. They didn't catch him in the camp, but they still did. But you're right. I mean, this the extra that plays this guard, they forgot to tell him that he's supposed to try to be happy in your work. It wasn't that, wasn't
not
that
even be, I don't know if it's be happy in your work, but just like, you know, he doesn't seem like menacing, you know, like I guess one of the things that we can say about this guard is like at this point in the movie, depending on where you are watching this, there's a good guy and a bad guy, right? Like, and he's not menacing. You actually feel sorry for the guard. Like, oh, I'm so like, oh, dude, like get another job, man. Like get another profession.
Okay, but this is wartime. So again, he doesn't get to choose his profession. Well,
okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, and he's really tall. Like that dude's huge, by the way.
Yes.
He's gonna train with Drago for like fighting against Rocky. Like
nice that's what that guard's there. Gonna what do you mean next. He's Drago's father? Why would he need to train with Drago? He's Drago's father.
Yep, there you go.
It's possible. It is possible.
Yep.
So the guard basically opens the door, Hiltz smiles and walks in into his again, they always bring him into the same Hilton, the suite in Hilton, you know.
Yeah.
They don't mix and match. They say, "Oh, you're good here. This is Hiltz's room."
Yes.
You know.
Yes. I'm sure at every other camp he was in, they had one with his name on.
That's right. I was going to say they need to put a plaque up. You know, this is Hiltz was here. And then he closes the door. We get to see that he predominantly actually locks it with the keys. Therefore, Hiltz didn't steal the keys from him this time. And then he starts walking away, and then he hears the sound of the baseball against the wall, which makes him stop. And then we actually get to hear the baseball four times, which it means eight beats because it has the beat where it hits the floor and then hits the wall.
Yep.
So we have eight beats of a baseball. Now, that got me thinking. All right, so I know you're a baseball fan. So do you know anything about the durability of a baseball?
I know that back then it probably would have been better than now, because it would have been real cork that was wound with whatever they wind it with, and then leather, right? So on cement, the way he was throwing it, I mean – yeah, he'd be all right. And the reason I say the way he's throwing it is because he's trying to bounce it, right?
Right.
And he's not trying to throw a curveball, which would scuff it up more. So if it's just taking two impacts, I mean, I think it would still have a bit of give. Although, as a funny story, I worked with my father for a while, and we were in tourism, and he was gifted, you know, like a novelty baseball, right? Like, you know, the kind that they give away at the ballpark on occasion or what have you. And he also had some legitimate real baseball. And I walked into his office and he literally was like, "This baseball is dead." And I was like, what do you mean? And he took a baseball that he had caught as a foul ball at a minor league stadium, right? So it's an official baseball. And he dropped it on the floor, which was like a cement, you know, a corporate cement floor covered in carpet. And it bounced almost right back to him, right? Just dropping comes back, right? He dropped the dead ball, and it didn't bounce at all.
Wow.
It was like a thud. It was like – so, like, you know, in my experience, as long as it wasn't like a dead ball, it'd probably last quite a while.
No, but you'd think it would last enough time. Let's say he's there. He's in the cooler, let's say, each time for 2 weeks. Okay, if he's constantly bouncing it, we don't know how much he's really bouncing.
I don't think he's constantly bouncing it because, I mean, his arm would fall off.
Well, he's got nothing right? else like, to do.
Well, he's got nothing else to do, but still, like, I just, you know, I mean, the other thing, and this is you said this last episode, and I didn't think about it, or this episode, and I didn't think about it, but, like, I guess having the ball in the glove would make it a better pillow.
Oh, right? That's true. Okay.
So, because it would give it a little bit of, you know, heft as opposed to just being. So, I mean, technically, maybe it's that for that, and he's just passing the time a little bit, and then the rest of these 2 weeks in the cooler or whatever it is, he's just sleeping.
Okay, could be. Well, he's as you mentioned, he's trying to think of new plans of how to get out. So,
yeah.
You know, he's got to think about that too. So, I did a little bit of research about durability of baseballs. Do you know, in currently, I wasn't able to find the information about what they did in the 1940s. Okay, but currently, how many pitches do you think they allow a baseball to be used a real game?
In a real game, I feel like unless you've got a no hitter going, and they're trying to hold on to the ball, I think it's like maybe. Let's see, the average at bat is probably somewhere in the range of like 7 pitches. So I would say the average lifespan is probably 8.5.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. The answer is 7 to 8 pitches.
Okay.
So yeah, you've got to figure that's good.
The balls get fouled away. So their lifespan's done, you know, they don't come back, and pitchers are so picky that they throw, you know, they're like, I don't like this anymore, and throw it to the, you know, to get a new ball from the umpire. So yeah, because
okay, you know, they got all their snot and, you know, dirt on it to give it a little more spin, you know,
a little more oomph. Yeah,
exactly. And so how many baseballs do you think they use in an average game? If we're talking 7 or 8 pitches.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at probably 7 or 8 pitches. I don't know. It's got to be like 100 or something like ridiculous. Because the thing about it is that we're not. Yeah, I'm going to go with 100.
Well, according to what I read, and I don't know if this is true or not, but that anywhere between 7 and 10 dozen baseballs in a game.
All right, so I'm right. I'm around there with 100. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, let's put it this way: that's probably how many they prep, right? Because the umpires have to rub down the balls and stuff like that. I mean, that's the thing. Hilt doesn't have that, like, because like a Major League Baseball is not clean. Like, it comes clean, and then the umpires go through a ritual of like rubbing it down with a certain kind of like dirt or sand or whatever. Right. So unless he's just grabbing random dirt from around the stalag, like that's a cleaner baseball, and he's throwing it in cement or concrete. So that's got to be one of the cleaner baseballs there is.
Yeah.
He must be like, when they get together for a game, he's like, no, this is mine. This is mine for in the cooler. You get a different ball.
Well, it's a good thing that Goff kept the right one. You know, he kept the ball for him.
Yeah.
And then the guard locks the door and starts walking away, is listening to the ball bouncing. And then he quickly turns around and then looks back. And you get the impression from him. And to me, this is the message of the movie. You know, you haven't beaten us.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm still here. I'm still in a good mood. You know, I'm still playing with my baseball.
So I feel like I've been trying to place this for a while. I watched this movie. I've seen this movie more than once before I watched it for this. But I don't know when I watched it. I don't know why I watched it. And I can't tell you the last time I did watch it.
Okay.
But I will tell you that this time, I mean, I liked it. And there were definitely scenes that I remembered, not the motorcycle scene. Like, there were definitely like scenes that you wouldn't normally think of that I remembered. But the thing that resonates now, because I have watched a lot of Hogan's Heroes in syndication.
Have you seen Stalag 17 also?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes. But I go to Hogan's Heroes because Hogan's Heroes had at least 3 episodes that I remember where the person they were smuggling out, like the new transferee that they were smuggling out, was like, why don't you come with us? And he's like, well, my duty is here to mess with them, right?
Right.
And I can understand if you've never seen Hogan's Heroes, like, or Stalag 17. If you've never seen those type of, you know, and, you know, Hogan's Heroes played it a little more comedically, but if you've never seen that working for the underground from the inside of a prison camp scenarios, this seems a little bit far-fetched, especially where it's like, why would Hiltz go out and come back, right? Or why would, you know, certain people be like, oh, you know, our job, what we're, you know, is to mess with the guards and, you know, make sure they need more guards and all. But coming from like that Hogan's Heroes, like underlying mentality, because I definitely watched Hogan's Heroes as a younger kid with like my grandparents and stuff. So that was there before I had watched this. So it just makes sense, right? Like this is just kind of more based on a true story than Hogan's Heroes, but like the rest of it still just makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's weird that I put those together, but like I feel like we all, the context we have for those of us that didn't live through the war is all in the media that we've kind of consumed of it.
Yes.
And,
mostly movies.
You know, I've been reading a lot
movies,
of Len
movies
Dayton.
And documentaries.
So I've gone, yeah, I mean, I've been reading a lot of Len Dayton, so I've covered a lot of World War II that way, which is a different perspective of it for me. But for the most part, yeah, it's Hogan's Heroes, it's The Great Escape, it's Stalag 17, and it's Memphis Belle. Those are my, as far as media goes for World War II, that's like my main influence.
Okay, well, if you want, I can give you a list of a whole bunch more you can check out.
I mean, I don't know if I seek it out necessarily, but it's, I'm definitely taking a break from World War II.
Okay.
Reading through all the Dayton stuff, I got a lot more context than I ever, and history lessons than I ever thought ever needed, really. So, but I've enjoyed it. And then, you know, the other piece is, this is a timepiece of a different kind of movie, right? Like the credits as an example. I love these kind of credits.
Okay, we're going to get there. We're just about there.
Yeah. but like I make sure to watch an older movie every so often because I feel like it's like riding a bike, it's like reading, it's like running, it's like a lot of other things where like if you don't do it for a long time, you fall out of how to do it,
right,
or you don't do it as well. And old movies have a certain pace. They're much slower. And I feel like if you don't watch a movie from the 60s or 70s for like, if you go years without watching it and then you pick one up, you go, wow, this is really slow. Versus if you just, you know, watch a movie from that time period every so often, they never seem slow.
Did this seem slow to you rewatching it?
No, but I've been, you know, I've kept up with it. I've been watching these films. I feel like had I not watched it, or had I not been watching films of the era, like I watched Zulu not too long ago.
Okay.
Right. And another Kane, which is The Man Who Would Be King.
Okay. But that's from the 70s.
And
already,
those are,
so that's
the... but those are still in that long, slower films.
Yes. Epic.
Slower by compared
slow
to like
epic
today.
Yes.
Yeah. And so watching this, not that different.
Okay.
For me.
Okay. That's fair.
It's, you get into that mindset, like you know what you're in for and like, let's go. Like I'm on a journey and we're going to build stuff. So I'm excited for it.
Right.
And that's kind of, you know, the one I haven't watched, which I own that I need to, is Kelly's Hero.
Oh, I just watched that last week. You should see that. Oh, that is so much fun.
I own it because I want to watch it. I just, I need to make the time because it's one of those that's like, it comes up so often.
That is such a fun movie. It's great. And it's got such a great cast and whatever. I mean, you got Clint Eastwood, you got Telly Savalas, Donald Sutherland, and Crap Game.
Mr. Fabulous.
Mr. Potato Head. Don Rickles. Don Rickles, who's known as Crap Game in the movie. So that's why I said crap.
Okay.
So yeah, you should see that. You definitely should see that. And then the guard starts walking away. We continue to hear the ball reverberate over over the music of the movie even.
Yeah.
And then we get a big shot which says this picture is dedicated to the 50. Which is great. That's just a great way for them to really end the last shot of this movie. To see, you know, that all right, it's been 20 years and you know, the movie is very different from the real story, as everyone knows from what we've discussed earlier this week, when my guests were all people who have some sort of personal connection to the real escape. But still, you can see that they're doing this in order to honor them. This was not made in any way to try to disparage any of them or say what they did wasn't right or anything like that. So I think this is a great dedication to them, the way that they did this.
Yeah, no, it really was.
And that's basically how the movie ends with this, or the shots of the movie, because then we get the credits, as you mentioned. I mean, in this minute, we get almost 30 seconds of credits, and the way they did credits back then is very different from the way that they do things nowadays, as you mentioned earlier. So we get only five of the main cast credits here. We get Robert Graff, the Ferret, Nigel Stock, who's Cavendish, the Surveyor, Angus Lenny, who's Ives the Mole, John Layton, who's Willie Tunnel King, who is one of only three cast members who's still alive as of today.
Okay.
Gordon Jackson, McDonald, Intelligence. So first of all,
by the way,
go ahead.
Gordon Johnson Jackson. As McDonald Intelligence Jackson. Gets so, oh, sorry. Gordon Jackson as McDonald Intelligence gets so shortchanged. Okay. Because the Ferret, the Surveyor, the Mole, the Tunnel King, these are great nicknames. Intelligence is literally what he does. It's not a nickname. It's like the intel or the spy or like it feels so disingenuous of like that he doesn't even have an article as a nickname.
Right.
Right. Like the rest of them have an article at least. And it's just kind of like intelligence. It felt a little like, wow. Like when they were handing out nicknames, you just got, looked over. Sorry.
I thought you were going to say he gets shortchanged because he gets cut off in this minute because he doesn't get his full few seconds that everyone else gets.
Well, he does, but you know, everybody else has a much cooler nickname of these five.
Yeah. I mean, I love the way they chose which shots to use of all of these characters. And
it's so,
I mean, because I know the movie so well, I can place where every one of these shots is, you know, in what scene they took the shot from. And they chose kind well. Of,
it goes back to like, you know, Marvel, I guess, kind of goes into it a little bit when they do the post, before the first post credit scene in Marvel movies, where they do like the animatic with the you know, Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, right? Like, and there's like motion to it. But it's not shooting. It's not taking a shot from earlier, which I like that it's not just static and it's not just text.
Right.
I think we need to go back to this.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you, what's your favorite movie end credit scene? Do you have one?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, honestly,
I mean, I'll tell you mine. Maybe that'll help you refresh your memory about something.
I'm leaning towards Animal House only because at the end of Animal House, at the very end of Animal House, in like the very first post-credits scene, there's a reference to Babs.
Okay, that's true.
And it says, "Say hi to Babs
when you're visiting Universal Studios.
And I feel like I know that that's like not quite what you meant, but it's immediately where my head goes.
Okay. All right. I completely understand why you would go there. So for me, the best credits scene that I've ever seen in a movie was Lethal Weapon 4. Okay. Where what they did was is they had finally finished, you know, making four movies in the series. And what they did was is they have music playing. They have a song, Why Can't We Be Friends? And they show pictures, production pictures, of everyone, not just the cast. They show, you know, you have the people who are dealing with the catering, and there's a shot of all the people in catering where you can see who these people are. Because one of the things that drives me nuts of watching credits, and again, depends on what movie. If you're talking about Lord of the Rings, where you have 20 minutes of credits, you know, that takes a long time to go through that anyway. But when you're looking at it, you want to know who these people are. A lot of times, I mean, not everyone will get home from watching a movie and go to IMDb and say, oh, who was that actor that was in the movie? So it's nicer if at the end of the movie, you can actually see who that person is. So the way they did it in Lethal Weapon 4, to me, is great.
I also think that like a hat tip to Jackie Chan, right? Because like when you watch, like, as an example, one of my favorite Jackie Chans is The Legend of the Drunken Master. And while the credits are running, you see all of the outtakes from the stunts, okay, right? Playing. And the text is over or on the side as you see him like jumping into fire.
Right. I remember these figures, like, that, like in the Cannibal Run movies and stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, that kind of a stuff, but it's a very different style too. But I mean, you know, look, all credit to Marvel for getting people to actually sit through the credits. I sat through them anyway. but I like the idea that in this kind of a roll call, if you will, it's not credits. Like, this is legit a roll call,
yeah,
basically. And I like that. It's missing from cinema today.
Yes, I completely agree with you. All right. So you have anything else you want to say about this minute or anything about the movie?
I still can't get over he got to take a baseball glove into this time or any other time. Like, that's still one of my, you know, okay, all right. That's a thing that he can do. I mean, I guess what would be the equivalent now? Like, I let him take his Nintendo, his Game Boy in there, right? Like, it's not a phone. He can't contact the outside world, but he can play Tetris.
Yeah, but his batteries are going to run out. That's the thing. With the baseball, the battery's never going to die unless it becomes a dead ball, as you mentioned. So, yeah. Okay. All right. I can see that. I can understand where you're going with that.
Yes.
All right. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes. You can tweet me if you did or didn't like any of the things I stated in this episode, at Agent Palmer. You can see my writings and rantings on agentpalmer.com, and you can listen to my show, released every 2 weeks on Tuesdays, where I have long-form conversations with interesting people, thepalmerfiles.com.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to this show. You can send me an email at thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Twitter account is greatescapemxm. And our Facebook group is The Cooler. And just to remind everyone, tomorrow is the final episode of this first season, because I have decided that I'm doing a second season. We'll see how many seasons I'll eventually do. But the second season, and so I've rebranded everything, and now it will be known as Movie Rob Minute. Tomorrow on Sunday, you will get a special episode, which is the final episode of this season and the final episode of the movie. And then on Monday, we're going to be starting with a whole new movie. We're going to be doing Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the 1987 comedy by John Hughes with Steve Martin and John Candy. So hopefully, when you're done listening to everything we have to say about The Great Escape, you'll want to come back and listen to what we have to say about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So, Jason, I want to thank you for joining us this, I guess you could sort of say, weekend, Friday, Saturday. I'm glad you were able to have time to watch the whole movie and come and discuss these two episodes with us.
Yeah, no, it was an absolute blast. Thank you for having me.
All right, I appreciate that. So, until tomorrow, everybody, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!